Good morning. So the reading is from Genesis 22, from verse 1. After these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, "Abraham." And he said, "Here I am." He said, "Take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah, and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you." So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him and his son Isaac. And he cut the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. On the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar. Then Abraham said to his young men, "Stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you." And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son. And he took in his hand fire and the knife. So they went, both of them together. And Isaac said to his father, "Abraham, my father." And he said, "Here I am, my son." He said, "Behold, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering?" Abraham said, "God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son." So they went, both of them together. When they came to the place of which God had told him, Abraham built the altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to slaughter his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham." And he said, "Here I am." He said, "Do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called the name of that place, "The Lord will provide." As it is said to this day, "On the mount of the Lord it shall be provided." And the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time from heaven and said, "By myself I have sworn, declares the Lord, because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you, and I will surely multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven and as the sand that is on the seashore. And your offspring shall possess the gate of his enemies, and in your offspring shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice."
Well, good morning. My name is Logan. I have the privilege to be the associate pastor here at Lower Manhattan Community Church. And I have the privilege of kind of closing out this brief sermon series, and kind of the sermon series is of the fall. We started the fall really looking at kind of emotions, and initially at negative emotions, and how those can kind of hold us captive and prevent us from actually being able to kind of engage in all that God has asked us to do, but the fact that God has given us those. In these last few weeks, we've kind of said, what does it look like to have hope in hard times? I like the phrase that Matt used last week, where our desire is that God would make us a people of resilient hope in the midst of our society that seems to lack it. And so today I get to talk about confidence. So I have a question for you. What comes to your mind when you hear the word confidence? Is it an experience that you've had? Is it a person that you know that kind of exudes that confidence? Well, on William Street, there's an ad that kind of presents an image that they talk about confidence. And in the ad, it's a little boy who's standing on the side of a pool with his floaty, and he's kind of on the edge, looking like he's about to jump. And the image is kind of to conjure back to us kind of that feeling. that when we were a kid, right before we've ever jumped in the pool for the first time, that nervousness of, am I able? This is unknown. What will happen when I do it? Or if you're a parent, remembering your child on the edge of the pool, that they were nervous about that leap. And the ad goes on to say, confidence is that moment that you go for it. That moment that you go for it, that you jump in. And I think that's a really good picture of confidence, because one of the favorite definitions that I came across this week was that the confidence is wholeheartedly attacking challenges without holding back. Wholeheartedly attacking challenges without holding back. Now, social sciences have started to study kind of the reason that confidence is so valuable. And they say in the workplace that confidence, if you're able to kind of tackle that and exude that in the workplace, it leads to greater career mobility and greater advancements in your career than other people that don't do that. In dating, if you're able to communicate a direct smile, it attracts that potential date. Everyone's like, hold on, say that again. Confidence has actually been shown to be one of the strongest motivators and influencers of behaviors, which means that if we have confidence in what we are to do, confidence that the outcome will be good for us, then we will act on that. But if we don't, if we lack it, if we allow insecurities to kind of overwhelm our confidence, it causes us to retreat from relationship, to retreat from the task, to retreat from God. And so what I want to do today is look at this story of Abraham, because what jumps out to me is that he has this unwavering confidence from the beginning of the story all the way to the end. And ask the question, how can you have that confidence? How can we have a confidence that when God asks us to do something, that we could be able to say, go and do it, even if it is as absurd and as giant as this ask that Abraham has from God? That in the face of God saying, sacrifice your son, the son that I've promised you, trust me, he's able to look at his servants in verse 5 and say, I and the boy will go worship on the mountain and we will both come back. But that's not how the sacrifices work, right? But he has a confidence that if he follows God's ask of him, that he and the boy will both come back. So how can you have that same confidence? Well, I'm going to unpack this in three sections: the fork in the road, the journey of doubt, and the reward of confidence. The fork in the road, the journey of doubt, and the reward of confidence. So the first section, the fork in the road. And what I want you to see in this is that when God asks you something, he's presenting a fork in the road for you, options, not obstacles. That it's not a wall that God has put in front of you that you're to overcome that's going to prevent you from your best life. It's actually that God is a good dad presenting you with two options and clear outcomes and giving you the ability to choose. And the question is, which will you take? Which will you take? Because it's too easy for us to experience God as someone who is demanding, someone that just wants to make it hard for us, that he's trying to prevent from us from having the most pleasure in this life, the best of this life, that he's just demanding so much of us and we have to give back to him. But that's just untrue of God. And here we see that Abraham could have experienced that as well, because this is a very gigantic and ridiculous and even absurd ask. God from the beginning has said, you will be a father of many nations and it will come through your one child, through Abraham and Sarah. And he's going to be the father of many nations, but here comes this ask that seems to fly in the face of God's initial promise. Sacrifice your only son. Sacrifice your legacy. Sacrifice your reputation. Sacrifice everything you've lived for and follow me. Now that seems absurd, but the truth of the matter is that every time God asks you to do anything, your initial thought is, that seems absurd. Even starting with faith, when God asks us to place our faith in him or in the fact that Jesus Christ lived, died, and rose again, that seems absurd on the surface until we start to investigate it. And so we start to really kind of get curious and explore it. And then something that seemed absurd and ridiculous begins to seem marvelous when we start to trust him. But this isn't the first time that God has placed kind of a big ask in front of Abraham. Starting in Genesis 12, we hear the story, and it's one big ask after another. But this is one of the few times that Abraham just immediately obeys and does everything that God asks, which tells us that Abraham has learned something about God's ask over the journey. That every time a fork in the road has come, there's been times where he has hedged his bets and kind of done a little bit of what God's asked and a little bit of what makes him comfortable. But this time he says, I'm just going to trust God. So what can we learn that Abraham has already learned? Well, the first, I think, is that we need to kind of observe how we view God's ask and this fork in the road, the two different paths. Because when God asks us to do something, we can feel like his path is one that is foggy and unfamiliar and unknown and scary. And then there's our clear path that our logic has told us, this is the way you should live, and this is how it will go well with us. I've got it figured out. And those of us who have gone that route over and over and over again and feel like we've been successful have said, I'm good on my clear path. I'm not going to go the foggy route. But Abraham has understood that, yes, it seems foggy at first, but God is very clear about the outcome. That like a good dad, God lays out two options. And he says, here's one path you can take. It may be unfamiliar. It may fly in the face of your reason. But on the end of this road, when the fog clears, there will be blessing. There will be joy. There will be good. And then you look to the other path and go, but I think I'll just settle for this one. Because I know this path. It's clearer. It's not as challenging. I know the steps that it's going to take. It may not be all that you promise, but I'll settle for the smaller promises of being safe and secure and comfortable. And so these are the paths that are laid out in front of us. And I describe it as God being a good dad because we don't typically view God like that when he asks. As I mentioned earlier, we view him as someone that just gives us obstacle after obstacle, that if we leap over these hurdles, then he'll reward us. Instead of understanding that God's going, no, I know what's best for you. This is pounded home to me every single morning when I ask my son to put on his jacket. And he is confident that he has the ability to endure 30-degree weather without a jacket. So one day I decide, all right, I will not fight you anymore. I will let you do this, but you need to know that you're not going to be able to go to recess. You're not going to be able to do that, and he is completely fine. So he is my confident son in the sense that he will pretend like everything is good, no matter what. So he went to school without a jacket. And when we picked him up, I mean, we got even got a call from the school because they were worried about us. And we're like, no, this is an opportunity for a lesson. And then he comes home, and we're like, so how'd it go today? How was recess? Oh, I didn't get to go to recess. Oh, why is that? Well, I didn't have a jacket. I go, oh, well, did you feel like you missed out? He's like, no, I got to hang out with the teachers. It was awesome. It's like, no, this is not what I was intending to do. But what I was trying to show him and give him the chance is that there's options. And God's the same way. He's a really good dad to you. That he's saying, here are the outcomes that you'll face. And he's not going to be a dad that constantly fights and controls and demands you. He'll let you choose your path. He'll let you choose outcomes that don't result in the full goodness of God being given to you. But he does that in hopes that you will one day discover, like Abraham did, that though the road seems foggy, it's a better path to take. So the first section is just to say that God presents forks in the road, not walls to overcome. But the question that I have to have for you is, what is God asking you to do? What is he asking of you? Are you listening? And what is your posture? Do you believe it to be a fork, or do you believe God is just demanding one more thing of you? I'll share just a brief personal story. For me, a while ago, this looked like God just asking me to take a day off every single week, just to rest and enjoy his blessings. That the idea of observing a Sabbath that is found in the Old Testament. And what happened was I used to be an urban planner and a civil engineer, and then my wife and I started the college ministry at our first church, and I was working a full-time job, and then this college ministry was going, and oh, by the way, here comes a kid, and we're starting a family. And after a year of kind of going down that journey, God just impressed upon me the fact that this will no longer be joyful if you continue on this path without resting. Without taking time to enjoy the blessings that I've given you, this will not last. Now, that flies in the face of my reason and kind of my addiction to achievement. And so what doesn't make sense to me is I have more on my plate, and God, you're saying use less time to accomplish it. But I decided to trust him and study what does this mean and what does it look like. And over the course of time, choosing to take his path, what I've discovered is that I will not sacrifice that Sabbath for anything, because I'm actually able to accomplish more out of rest than I am out of exhaustion. And the only way I would have known that is by trusting God's ask, even though it flew in the face of my reason. So what is God asking you that's flying in the face of your reason that you're ready just to say, okay, I trust you? Now, the second section is the journey of doubt. And I called it that because just because you choose God's ask or his path does not mean that you won't struggle with doubt along the way. Sometimes we think, okay, now I've obeyed God, now he's just going to make the path clear, the fog's going to clear really quickly, and it's just going to be smooth sailing. But here in this story, Abraham's journey is 3 days. For 3 days, he has to be running in his mind the last few decades of his life of going, God, you promised that Isaac was the one. Why are you asking now to kill him? What is going on here? And the only window into the doubt that we get is not Abraham's doubt, but Isaac's. Isaac looking around going, okay, I see the fire. I see the wood. Where's the sacrifice? And then Abraham's response, God will provide. Now, I think I grew up reading this story and thinking that Abraham or Isaac was just kind of this infant that didn't really know what was going on. But Jewish scholars have really kind of settled on the fact they believe he's somewhere between 5 and 32 years old, which is a wide range for scholars. But the point of the story is Isaac knows what's going on. They didn't play sacrifice when he was growing up, so he knows what's going up. So he's very aware of that, and just like us, he doubts. This doesn't make sense. If there was going to be a sacrifice, we would have that with us while we went to the altar. See, the journey of doubt is often seeking to answer two big questions that we have of God on a regular basis. The first is, does God care? Does he really care? Will he provide? Is he going to come through? And the second question has more to do with us. Do I have what it takes? Do I have what it takes to complete this journey? Do I have what it takes? The first one is questioning God. The second one is often questioning ourselves. And what I want us to see in this journey is that what happens with doubts that come into our mind, especially when it's questioning God and questioning ourselves, is it tends to turn us away from facing God, because we don't think that doubts and dealing with God in the same sentence can happen. And so we think that doubts we have to wrestle with over here, kind of turn our back to God a little bit. But what God does here is he invites us to take our doubts directly to him the same way that Isaac takes his doubts to Abraham. And one of the stories that has kind of been pounded home to me in this way that I love is actually another story in the Old Testament in the book of Judges. And it's the story of Gideon. And when God shows up to ask Gideon, who is hiding from the Midianites who have taken over Israel, to become the lead warrior to overthrow the oppressors of Israel. And I'm going to read it for you here in Judges 6, and hopefully it's on the screen. Judges 6, 11 through 18. It says, one day the angel of God came and sat down under the oak of Ophrah that belonged to Joash the Abizrite, whose son Gideon was threshing wheat in the winepress, out of sight of the Midianites. And the angel of God appeared to him and said, God is with you, O mighty warrior. Gideon replied, with me, my master? If God is with us, why has all this happened to us? Where are the miracle wonders of our parents and grandparents told us about, telling us, didn't God deliver us from Egypt? The fact is, God has nothing to do with us. He has turned us over to Midian. But God faced him directly. Go in the strength that is yours, save Israel from Midian. Haven't I just sent you? And Gideon said to him, me, my master? How and with what could I ever save Israel? Look at me. My clan's the weakest in Manasseh, and I'm the runt of the litter. And God said to him, I will be with you. Believe me, you'll defeat Midian as one man. Gideon said, if you're serious about this, do me a favor. Give me a sign to back up what you're telling me. Don't leave until I come back and bring you my gift. And God said, I'll wait till you get back. There's a few reasons I love this story. One, because Gideon and I share the love language of sarcasm. But second, the fact that God just says, bring your doubts. No matter how violent they seem in your mind, bring them to me. Face me with your doubts. Your doubts are not resolved by hiding in a wine press the way that Gideon was and hiding from God. Your doubts are resolved when you face me with them, when you argue with me, when you shout at me the way that Gideon does. But God doesn't turn his back when Gideon shouts. He actually presses in. And he even gives him the answer to his doubts, and the answer is found in God's provision. The irony of Gideon's question is the answer is found in his questioning. When he says, where is that God of old who delivered us from Egypt? See, part of God's answer on our journey of doubt is the echoes of provision past. That we would hear and remember all the times that God has come through. Because our doubts say, God is done coming through. But the echoes of provision past remind us that God has never failed us. That every time he has asked us, every time he has said he will do something, he has followed through on that promise. And so on the journey of doubt, instead of listening to the questions that go on in our head, we need to listen to the provisions of past that God has given to us. And what that will teach us is to listen with expectation for the provision that is coming. And that's what happens in this story with Abraham and Isaac. As Isaac lays down and ties him up, and the angel comes and says, stop. His ears are tuned, thank goodness, to the angel of the Lord. So he stops the knife, and there in the background, he hears the rustling in the bushes, and there's the provision that God has promised, the ram for the sacrifice in place of Isaac. So when you're on this journey of doubt that all of us face, because what happens is just like Abraham had a 3 days journey, when we take the path that God has asked us to take, it doesn't happen on our time frame. It doesn't happen kind of on the easy path often. But here it says, Abraham said, you provide on the mountaintop. You provide when you get there. See, some of us stop short of seeing the full provision of God because we want it to happen on our time frame, on our timetable, instead of walking through the midst of the fog until the journey is final. So don't let the journey of doubt turn you away from him, but let it be something that causes you to face him so that you'll see and hear his provision. So that's the journey of doubt. And if you press on in section 3, you'll receive the reward of confidence. In this section, I want to return to the first question we asked. How can we have this confidence that Abraham has? And not just Abraham, but Isaac. See, Abraham's confidence kind of gets highlighted here, but Isaac is the one who lays down. Isaac is the one that lays down on the altar, allows himself to be tied up, and allows his father over a burning flame to raise his knife. We don't get the sense that he cries out. We get the sense that both of them have this confidence. So how do we get that confidence? Well, first I want to ask, how do we normally get confidence? How do you get confidence in the workplace or in sports or in music? For us, it's often through practice. That it's through repetition of doing the same thing over and over again so that we can be confident that we'll make the shot, that we'll hit the pitch, or we practice the scales, we practice our piece so that when the performance comes, we're ready for the show. Is it the same way? Well, I'll say yes, but no. Yes, there is an area of confidence that only comes through obedience. There is a level of confidence that you can only get by hearing God's ask and then obeying. Because what happens is when you follow that path and you receive God's provision in return, the good news for you is that you see this was a good idea. And it builds in you confidence for the next time. The next time God asks to trust, you'll do it. But it's not the only way that you get confidence, because that type of confidence, of obedience, really gives a confidence in your own ability, the same way practice does in sports. that it gives you the confidence that I have what it takes and that I can do this. I can obey God and it'll go well. But Abraham's confidence is not based purely in his success, because he had a ton of failures. See, when God asked him to leave his family, he obeyed, kind of. He obeyed and left, but he also brought along Lot. And in that kind of hedging his bets of the comfort of having family around, it actually caused great strife and difficulty, because he had to go to war to save Lot. They ended up fighting with one another. When God asks him to trust him that he's going to provide him with a son, he says, well, Sarah's kind of old and she hasn't had a kid yet, so I'm just going to take her servant and I'm just going to do it the way I know how to do it. And God says, no, that's not how it goes. And the fruit of that is strife within his own home. But here, instead of hedging his bets, he does both. Because you can gain, your failures and successes with God and his ways can give you greater confidence with him, with one big if. And the big if is if you are in relationship with God, and if you stay in relationship with God. Because the thing that kind of matters more than his success and his failures is that he stayed in relationship with God. He continued to pray. He continued to press in. He continued to try to obey along the road. And he allowed his failures to inform that, yeah, I shouldn't do that anymore. When God asks, I shouldn't disobey because it doesn't go well. And he allowed his successes to inform him, yes, it should. But the thing that gave him greater confidence was that God was able to overcome his bad decisions. God was able to provide for him in old age when it was beyond his reason and logic. And he believed that if God was able to do that, if God was able to give him a child in old age to overcome his bad decisions, then God was able to raise Isaac from the dead if he sacrificed him. That God was able to do something he never has seen God do. Now, I'm not just making that up, that that's what he believed. It's actually what the scriptures tell us, which is nice. In Hebrews chapter 11, which kind of gives us kind of the heroes of the faith and why they're heroes, it says this: it was by faith that Abraham offered Isaac as a sacrifice when God was testing him. Abraham had received God's promises, was ready to sacrifice his only son, Isaac, though God had promised him, "Isaac is the son through whom your descendants will be counted." Abraham assumed that if Isaac died, God was able to bring him back to life again. And in a sense, Abraham did receive his son back from the dead. Do you believe that God can do something that he has never done before in your life? Do you have that confidence? See, because this is kind of one big risk-reward equation for us with God. Even having a relationship with him, a risk of having a relationship with someone we can't see face to face. But God's continually working to mitigate in your mind any risk that ever exists. Because we don't have to be like Abraham and wonder if God can resurrect the dead. Because we can look back at his only son, Jesus Christ, and know with confidence that he's able to raise him from the dead. And so if he is able to raise him from the dead, how is he not able to do anything in your life? That's the message of the scriptures. It actually says it. That like the angel said to Abraham, because you haven't even held back your only son, I will freely give you blessings. The promise of God is, if I am not even going to hold back my only son, Jesus Christ, how would I not freely give you all things? How would I not freely give you all things? Which should communicate to us that the next time the fork in the road comes, that though it seems foggy, the promise at the end of that road is true, and it will be there. Because in Christ, God's promises are always true, are always fulfilled, and will always be there. So what is God asking you today? And where are your doubts in that? Are they rooted in, does God care? Well, the answer in Jesus is yes, forever. Is it in, do I have what it takes? And God says, you don't need what it takes. I'm with you in Jesus Christ. So it may sound like a risk, but in Jesus Christ, there's no longer any risks. There's just rewards. Let's pray. Father, I ask that you would tune our ears to hear your voice in prayer and in your word. God, that we may, like Abraham, hear you call our name and then respond, "Here I am." Father, overwhelm our doubts with a confidence in you that says in Jesus all things are possible. And let us turn and trust you. We pray this in Christ's name. Amen.